Blog Talk Radio.
This is Julia Widdup with Talk Story Radio, and we have with us this morning Marianne Bernal. She is an author, and she's going to talk to us about the writing business and her books. So, good morning, Marianne.
Good morning, Julia. How are you? Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, good to have you. So tell us about the writing world,
okay.
According to Marianne.
According to Marianne, I always loved writing. And when I started doing English extracurricular activities, studies, and so on, I got into medieval England, and Ivanhoe was the book that really was the catalyst that put me into the time period. I really loved the Vikings and all those other romantic style heroes that Hollywood, you know, made sure young impressionable kids knew about when I was growing up. So I took, over the years, I took writing workshops and other creative writing courses. I even took a novel writing course. This is in separate from my business degree. It's you have to pay the bills, and writing doesn't really pay the bills, especially in the competitive business of book publishing. So it took me almost a lifetime before I was able to sit down and write my first novel, which is The Briton and the Dane, and that's my Eric the Viking novel, and that was in 2009. And since then, I've completed the trilogy. And I also have two standalone novels in the series, The Briton and the Dane Concordia and The Briton and the Dane Timeline. And then I also wanted to expand my audience because historical fiction is, you know, one specialty genre. So I also wrote some short story collections called Scribbler Tales, and they're all contemporary. And there's a variety of genres. I wanted to entice everybody. So we have crime, and we have some and kidnappings and murder and all the fun stuff that goes into the TV series that are top-notch this coming season. So I've been busy doing that. But the marketing takes up quite a bit of time because you have to make sure you're visible. You have to make sure people know who you are, and you got to get your information out there, and that's very important. You can't always, you know, depend on your publisher to do it because they have limited marketing budgets out there for you, and for the unknown person, that is, it's pretty hard to get yourself with the foot in the door, per se. I've experienced it all. I did have a conventional publisher, and I also am self-published, and the aspect of it really remains the same. And the biggest thing is you can't give up. You have to just keep on plugging along because there's a only about 47% of the market reads, and there's a lot of people competing for that 47%. So you really have your work cut out for you, you know, to try to get your story out there and to try to get your story in front of readers.
And so, is that why you went into audiobooks, because to expand that 47% to the people who might not read, but they'll...
That's right. That is correct. I wanted my books run, available in every format. So, of course, we have the print and then the digital e-books, and now with the audio. And I have, I'm working with a producer right now. I'm in the process of producing The Briton and the Dane Concordia. I recently had The Briton and the Dane released on iTunes and Audible, and also it's on Amazon, of course. The Briton and the Dane Timeline is also available on iTunes, Audible, and Amazon. And my Scribbler Tales, I have all five volumes are also available on iTunes and Amazon and Audible. So this way, the marketplace a lot of the young readers today, they would rather listen to the story than read it. So that is the reason I went into the audio aspect of the business, because I think that you're going to have more of an increase in subscribership going forward. As I don't know why younger people today don't really want to read as much. I think it goes with the youth-oriented society, but as they mature, then they pick up the book. So it's a difficult market to try to get into and make some decent money on it, which is why we never quit our day job.
Yeah. Well, I also use the audio a lot, like when I'm traveling, because you can be traveling and you can be driving and still listen to a book.
That's correct. That's correct.
I don't think that, especially on long road trips, that really doesn't distract from your driving.
No, it doesn't. And the other part is, too, like I have it on my tablet and, of course, on my phone. And when I'm flying cross-country or whatever, I listen to my own books because I love them. And my producers do a great job. It's a great story. And I will just sit back, relax, and listen to myself in Eric's little kingdom in the 9th century and just go back in time. And it's really... It passes the time quickly, and before you know it, you landed, and you listen to the. I think it's great that we have this opportunity and this new avenue that's available to authors out there to be able to do it.
Yeah, I just love audiobooks. Talk to us a little bit about marketing. Do you have any tricks for the other writers who might be listening?
No, you have to, build your platform. The publishing companies want your platform, so that includes your blog. How many blog views do you get a day? That includes Twitter followers. How many Twitter followers do you have? Your Facebook fan page. And there are so many. The problem is you have to start being selective on where you're going to put your profile, because there's just so many sites out there that's geared for authors that you can showcase your books, but it's like next to impossible to maintain these all on a daily basis. There's just too many. So basically what I do is I do my quite a lot with Twitter in that not just I just don't just promote my books and stuff. My blog, I do my little history trivia post where I'll tell you today what's going on in history. And just for an FYI, today's birthday of the Marine Corps, so I did a little post for happy birthday to the Marine Corps, stuff like that, which it brings in a wider audience, because you don't want to just keep saying all the time, hey, buy my books. People get tired of that and they don't want to. They're more interested in other things. And so I will do history trivia posts. If I find an article, something like with archaeology, because I love ancient Rome and the Romans and the Runes and, Anglo-Saxon Britain, Vikings and everything. And there's a lot of archaeological information out there. And if I come across an article that I find interesting, I will share that and I will tweet things like that. So my Twitter exchange isn't just by my books. It's, hey, I'm interested in this. You might be interested in this also. And I also try to do, the current events, social, what's going on in our country today. I'll retweet stuff like that. So I try to keep the exposure out there and to show that, there's a widespread of choices here that you can visit my web pages, my fan pages and stuff, and I'm not just, telling you to buy my books, but I'm just sharing part of my passion of what I really am interested in. I do have, if you do a search on profile sites where authors can list their stuff, as I said, there's quite a few. So I have to limit it what I can do there, because I can't interact every day sites. It's just, there's just too many. So when you see what's available to you, pick out what you think interests you, what works best for you, and then, you know, publish your profile. And most of these places will let you have a profile site at no cost. There's mm-hmm. some out there that might charge a once-in-a-lifetime membership fee to generally not that expensive. They're generally, they run maybe $20-$25, and but your profile will stay there forever. You can update it as you get more books and so on. But they're also out there, and it depends on what your marketing budget is. And also, you have to be careful with the marketing budget. There's a lot of sites out there that, you know, they'll say for X amount of dollars, we can guarantee this, but, you know, there's no guarantee in book sale. So, you know, mm-hmm. you spend your marketing, you know, spend it wisely. Everybody's going to, you know, do a good game saying, well, we can, but that doesn't mean it's going to equate to a book sale. So, you know, make sure the most important thing here is research. Before you spend your money, research. Find out, you know, what they really do, what can they really provide, because one, to get your book out there is word of mouth, and that's never going to go away. Somebody's going to say, hey, this is a great book, and before you know it, it's off the shelves. And that's the million-dollar question. How do we find that one person for the word of mouth to get our story out there? That's it. And if I could get that answer, I'd be very rich, and then I could quit my day.
Yeah. Well, on to your characters and your story. You had talked about reading an excerpt of your book.
Oh, yes. I would like to, if it's okay with you, I'd like to read the prologue from the Britain and the Dane timeline. And that book is available on iTunes for anybody that would like to, you know, have the audio version. All the information for my books and everything are on my webpage, which is maryannebernal.com, very easy to remember, or my publisher's page, which is ringlegendspress.com, and that's all one word, too, so very easy to remember. But if it's okay, I can start now.
That'd be great. I'd love to hear it.
Okay, here we go. This is the Britain and the Dane timeline. It was a crisp autumn day in the year of our Lord, 2066. The sun was obscured by swollen storm clouds as wind gusts scattered leaves across the courtyard, scraping tree branches against office windows. Inside the stone building, oblivious to the impending storm, students went about their daily tasks like automatons, cataloging fragile remnants of antiquated history. Their enthusiasm had been lost over time, vanquished by archaic rules and lack of funding in an apathetic sea. The door opened just as a heavy rain began to pummel the earth. Lightning flashed perilously close to the portico, the building shaken by crackling rows of thunder. Dr. Malcolm Dinger, department head, scoured the room, nodding to his worker drones as he headed towards the stairwell. He ran down the deeper into the bowels of the ancient edifice, slowing his gait once he reached the basement. Malcolm peered into the open doorways where artifacts were stored, priceless relics forgotten by a society no longer curious about the past. The lights flickered briefly as the tempest enveloped the city. He walked the length of the corridor and stopped once he reached the last office, knocking on the doorframe before entering. 1 minute, Gwyneth said, her eyes upon the monitor, her nimble fingers flying across the keyboard. While Dr. Franger had mastered every aspect of computer technology available at the present time, she preferred typing her words rather than speaking them aloud. She even had a typewriter that worked, proudly displayed in her office at home. She was considered eccentric among her peers, but the student body praised her for her defiance, and her classes were always filled. Malcolm shook his head as he sat at his favorite chair, his eyes transfixed on the portrait hanging above his protege's desk, an alleged likeness of Lord Eris, the last descendant of Gwyneth and Eric of Wareham, painted years after his death by an unknown medieval artist. Legend described a mighty warrior, proficient not only with the sword but with the pen, a man of letters who had served his king well. Songs attesting to Lord Eric's prowess on the battlefield had even been sung by the troubadours, only to be lost with the passage of time. Yet time simply enhanced the mystique of this Saxon of Danish descent, whose untimely death was suspect, implying treachery and betrayal in a violent age. Malcolm tolerated Gwyneth's obsession with a man who had died centuries ago, but he was not sure why. Gwyneth and Eric had started the dynasty, and perhaps Dr. Gwyneth Frazier was the reincarnation of the, if one believed in such things. You are doing it again, Malcolm thought. Why not just admit you love the woman and be done with it? Glancing about the room, Malcolm finally counted the numerous awards Dr. Gwyneth Frazier had received over the past 2 years. He was proud of her accomplishments, her diligence, her commitment to the truth, even though the forces driving her were not rational. Science demanded validity, not emotional conjecture, but Gwyneth concealed her motives well, at least to everyone but himself. He had seen through the charade, but remained silent. Yes, he was patronizing, but subtly. She was caught up in the premise, too closely attached to a dream, a forsaken love, never to be realized. How could a person be in love with someone who lived hundreds of years ago, especially someone whose intellect surpasses most of the tenured professors at the university, Malcolm thought, shaking his head. If it were any you would have had her seen by a psychiatrist. It is not normal, and if you did not know any better, you would swear she is possessed. Malcolm's stoicism in his thoughts as the sound of his deaf fingers hitting the keyboard brought him out of his reverie. He glanced at his wristwatch sifting in his chair, his patience wearing thin. Gwyneth failed to notice his impatience as she ended her communication and glanced in Malcolm's direction. It's done. I leave for Wareham at the end of the week. Another reenactment. Alfred the Great and the Danish threat when Lord Richard commanded the citadel, explained, her eyes depicting her excitement. I didn't think there were any of those reenacting groups left. There are quite a few, I believe, but these reenactors were quite by accidentally found. I still can't believe it's happening. How long will you be away? Malcolm asked, calendar in hand. Just the weekend. I'll be back early Sunday afternoon. I haven't forgotten about this reception and convincing Viscount Beaumont to fund another year excavating the ruins. That is, unless you can speak to him. Just how long is this event? Malcolm glanced at Gwyneth, but their eyes locked for a brief moment when the truth of unspoken feelings was revealed, acknowledged yet veiled within the recesses of two souls. Gwyneth averted his gaze, standing up from her desk, the flickering lights obscuring the shadows. The seconds were a welcome respite from facing the inevitable. Gwyneth fumbled through the drawers, searching for a flashlight, her shaking hands barely discernible as she groped for the familiar torch. She wrapped her hand around the precious light source and was relieved when the ceiling lights finally stopped fluttering. Malcolm was also unnerved, his vulnerability exposed for a second. He coughed, his eyes upon the floor while waiting for the moment. His thoughts focused on his work, his profession, and the reason for his visit. Take the 2 weeks, Malcolm said. I'll deal with Beaumont. Oh, Malcolm, please, thank you. I will make this up to you, I promise, Gwyneth beamed, hugging him briefly before stepping back, somewhat embarrassed. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Gwyneth, I don't mind really, but now that this matter is settled, I would discuss the reason for the visit. I am pleased to inform you that you are now officially tenured, and I will be putting your name forward as head of the department.
That is your job, are you leaving?
In a manner of speaking. Malcolm, so secretive. Tell me. I cannot bear the suspense. You are talking to the Deputy Vice Chancellor, but you must not say a word until the appointment has been announced. In her excitement, Gwyneth embraced Malcolm, kissing him on his cheek, but this time he held her tightly, kissing her lips as the lights suddenly, plunging them into darkness. That's the end of the prologue.
Woo! That was pretty fascinating. Now I'm dying to know.
What happened to her, and how did Gwyneth end up with her Lord Eric that she doesn't see? And it's the, you know, fantasy time travel story where, as always, the heroine gets, you know, transported back in time, and we have a whole storyline where she's with the last descendant of Eric and Gwyneth of Wareham, which is another Lord Eric, and we have a storyline just before, it takes place a few years before the Battle of Hastings, when William the Bastard, you know, conquers England. So that's the storyline, whereas the trilogy takes place during the reign of Alfred the Great. We fast forward a couple hundred years.
Wow. So, wow, this sounds fascinating.
So, and I have fun writing it, and Michelle Lukovich is the producer who did the audiobook, and she did a fantastic job with it. And if you go on my webpage, there's audio samples for all my audiobooks. You can listen to her first chapter and, you know, get a feel for her voice and so on. And it's also on my blog. I also have the audio samples for people to listen to, so they could, you know, decide which story they would like to read first. And the story for the trilogy, in case people need to know the order of the book, it's the Briton and the Dane birthright, and then we tie up loose ends in the Briton and the Dane legacy. So that's the original trilogy. And then Concordia, a spin-off from one of the characters in the trilogy, and of course that's fast forward another 15-16 years, you know, for her story, because it's a coming-of-age story where she's growing up. So that's Concordia. And the only reason she won out over all the other characters, when I was trying to decide which character to write a spin-off on, her voice was loudest in my head, so she won.
So, I think that is
writer,
how it,
that's how it
your
goes,
characters
right?
Start telling you how it goes, don't
that's
they?
Right. That's right. You know, in all my classes and everything, they say, you know, have your outline, write your outline and stuff. And I always start out the way you're supposed to do it, to write your little outline. And before, you know, you're in with a couple of chapters, the next thing you know, your outline's in the garbage can because your characters just took over and you're going every which way but what you wanted to do originally in your outline.
That's what I discovered, and it turns out better if you let your characters have their way.
That's right. And that's why, you know, the Briton and the was supposed to be just one story. The Briton and the Dane was about my Eric the Viking novel, and all of a sudden I had all these characters say no. And I ended up having all these, it's a very complicated series because I have multiple storylines running through the whole series. And that's why it ended up with three books, because I had to tell everybody's story because everybody wanted more airtime. You know, it's like, no, I'm, you know, me. And I had to really, you know, I had to discipline myself for Concordia because we were still getting little characters saying, hey, remember me? And I'm going, no, you go back into the trilogy. So, yeah, they take over. And so one book became three, and that was the that's how we got into the trilogy. So and then with the timeline came about, I really felt bad for Eric and Gwyneth because they sort of really got, I mean, yeah, the story, he's always in the background, the two of them, but all these other characters, you know, interrupted that storyline.
Overshadowed
so really
their story.
Yes, and I, you know, I wanted to dedicate a Gwyneth and Eric story, so I decided to do that with timeline, only it would be a different Gwyneth and Eric, but the love, you know, between them is still there, and, you know, so I put them into timeline, and the best way to do it was to put her back in time. So that's when I came upon the, you know, the time travel fantasy aspect of the story to get her back there. And, you know, it's most times, you know, it's either something in the lab or a storm gets them back there. So I decided to go with a storm because I have the tempest in a lot of my novels with the, you know, lightning and thunder, because it makes for good screen time when this finally gets on the big screen. It's always great to have the storm and the thunder and so on. So we have a massive storm that whisked her back into the timeline, you know, to get her back there to where she was. And once she's there, then I just, you know, went with the storyline of the, you know, the history that was going on, where there was all the intrigue and stuff, and who was going to, you know, be the heir to the throne, since King Edward didn't have any heir children. So, you know, there's all that intrigue going on. Well, who's going to sit on the throne and who they promised? And, you know, you have Harold's Harada and Harold Godwin, who eventually, you know, fight for the crown, but I don't want to go into history and bore people, so I'll just go into the storyline where you have the intrigue there, and is, you know, is Eric going to, who's Eric going to support? Will they kill him if he doesn't support the right person? I can't. So there's all that intrigue going on, because it was really a very perilous set. Our time isn't that much better with everything that's going on.
Well, all times are perilous, aren't they? But we have just about 3 minutes left. Tell us a bit about the Scribbler's Tales.
Oh, okay, thank you. Scribbler's Tales is a, we're doing different stories for different genres, and what I did was, I could just give you, all right, so for volume one, I went with Desperate Pursuits, Forbidden Lore, Forever Lost, The Hourglass, and Sail With Me, which is a Nagy Brack story. They all run about 2,500 words each, so they are quick reads and they're exciting. Volume two is Broken Promises, Deception, Endgame, Malice, and The Portrait. Volume three is Hidden Lies, Nightmare, Payback, Night Stalker, Turning Point. Volume four is Abducted, Cunning, Enamored, Reckless, The Safeguard. And volume five is Bloodlust, Illusion, Hunt, Pandemic, and Revenge. So I have a wide choice here for anybody. If you want, with The Portrait, we have the evil presence in The Portrait that wants to take over somebody's body. Broken Promises, of course, is a broken love affair where promises weren't kept and the girl takes the fall. We have The Hourglass, where we're dealing with Hades to keep somebody alive on the battlefield. It's all good stuff here that's more contemporary, you know, and easier for people to read. And there's a little bit of history, not too much, but mostly contemporary and mostly stuff that happens today.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. We're looking forward to seeing some of that on your profile, too, at talkstory.media. We have profiles,
okay,
and authors often put little excerpts on there. So
okay, I can do that. I can put excerpts for. Can you, if you want the media, I can do the audio, and then I'll probably do a little, you know, PDF quick excerpt also for you.
That'd be wonderful. Okay, well, our time's up, so I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Julia. It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
It was fun. And thank you for being a subscriber to Talk Story Media.
And I continue to share the site, and we look forward to hearing other interviews down the road, too.
All right. Thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.